Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, my friends. Hi, guys. How's everyone doing? This is Nicole, and you've reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. I'm so happy you guys are here with me today. Woo, I don't know about you parents out there, but the end of the summer, getting to back to school readiness and still having the, at least in the Northeast, super hot weather, and just the hectic nature of this time of the year. I don't know about you guys, but I'm ready to fall over dead. Also trying to keep up with my work, also trying to keep up with just teenager issues and all the things. So I'm exhausted. I am recording this at 10:30 at night, which is usually past my bedtime. But if I'm going to get into podcast this week, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So I'm here with you guys. I'm happy to be here with you guys. I'm excited to talk about parenting because even if you are not a parent, I really encourage you to listen to this episode because what I'm really talking about is you. I'm relating it to parenting because parenting is such a triggering experience, but I'm really talking about you, whomever you are, and you'll get that as you listen to the podcast. So, just making some plans for the fall. Probably next week or the week after, I will be announcing all of the mini retreats that are going to be offered in the fall. So stay tuned for that. I know a lot of people have been asking about them and they are coming. I also want to remind you that my three mini retreats, the self-compassion mini retreat, the fawning mini retreat, and the inner child mini retreat, those three recordings are available on my website. People write me emails all the time and I always write back and, you know, if I can, and direct people. But if you want to learn about my self-compassion work, my inner child work, or my fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, specifically around the fawn response, that stuff is all available. If you just click on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, hover over retreats, and you'll see something about purchasing retreat recordings. So it is there. So so there's that. There's retreats that are going to be announced. What else? What else? Little blue dog update. I don't know if you guys, if anybody out there has a dog that had an ACL surgery, otherwise known as a TPLO. Blue had the left knee, and not 4 or 5 weeks after he fully recovered from that, he did the right knee, and now he has an infection apparently from the plate that they put in the one in the second surgery in the right. So we have to go in for another operation to take that out and then hopefully he'll be well. But God, you know, I've had quite the summer. Do you ever feel like you have one of those times where it's sort of metaphorically like you're in the waves and you got just pummeled by a wave, okay? And you're all right, like sand in your hair, you're okay. But you stand up and you wipe your eyes and you take a deep breath and all of a sudden you open your eyes and you get pummeled again by a wave. That has been my entire summer in good and bad ways. And one thing I want to say to you guys in terms of inspiration, because I always like to use myself, as you know, as the best example I have in how to thrive because I know myself better than I know anyone else. I just want to inspire you that you can be going through a really, really hard time and still be okay. This summer for me has been a really hard time. I've had some pretty significant changes in my personal life. I've had kids who are having all sorts of post-quarantine slash COVID time issues in terms of kind of shaking off the last year and a half and trying to prepare themselves for school and life and, you know, just teenagers. You know, I have three teenagers. I have a 13-year-old, a 17-year-old, and an 18-year-old who will be 19 next month. And so just a lot, work stuff, you know, preparing for Omega, which was absolutely incredible, but it just takes a lot of work. So anyway, I've been pummeled by waves all summer, but I got to tell you guys, I'm all right. And the way I like to describe it is I'm totally fucked up. Everything is hard. I'm overwhelmed all the time, and I'm really good. And if you guys can hear in my voice the calm, that is how calm I basically stay. Because life, as I always say, is just the passing weather. I am the sky. My problems, my kids' problems, my work challenges, they're the weather. And if you can just stay centered, if you can just stay close to you, they will pass. And it's not that the problem itself will pass necessarily. I mean, some problems stick around for a bit, like a weather system. It's the feelings around the problems will pass, because a situation can last for months, but the anxiety and the panic and the terror that can grip me in moments where I'm super triggered, that will pass. If I just breathe, if I pause before I react so I can respond to life, create that little space between a stimulus and a response. If I keep my mind open to what the next right considered action needs to be, which I do, life continues to move on and I'm great. I'm good. I'm really good. I'm a little tired, but I'm really good. So I hope you can apply that a little bit to your own life. So today I want to talk about parenting and why parenting is so triggering, because I think we don't always understand why we're so uncomfortable when our kids are uncomfortable. And as I said, this is not just for people who are actual parents, because there could be other situations, like in work or with friendships or in relationships, where you're so, so uncomfortable and you're so triggered and your anxiety and your reactivity is so high, and it just doesn't really make 100% sense. So I'm going to do this through the lens of parenting, but I want you to know it really can be applied to any intimate relationship in your life, whether it's a relationship with friends, family, partnerships, or even colleagues. So when I think about parenting, I think about the fact that for a long time, I parented relatively asleep, which means I was a good mom. We put that in quotes. I was a good mother. I cared about my children immensely. I read all the parenting books. I, you know, went on all the message boards when my kids wouldn't eat or wouldn't sleep or didn't walk or hit a milestone at the right time. You know, I was a good mother, but I was so triggered when certain things would happen with my kids. And I noticed that there were certain things that would happen that my kids would be really upset about, and I wouldn't care at all. I would be able to almost emotionlessly hold a boundary. Like, for example, if this, and this is just me. I mean, we all have our different triggers and our different things that come easily and are more of a challenge. For me, a temper tantrum is not upsetting. Now, it's super upsetting to the person having the temper tantrum. But for me, because I was not a child who was ignored when I was having feelings or shut down per se. I mean, all parents shut kids down to some extent. I don't feel incredible pity or pain to watch a child have a tantrum and not get what they want. Like, I have I have ease, this is just me, with boundaries. So if I say it's time for dinner in an hour or a half hour or 10 minutes and somebody would ask me for a cookie or, you know, whatever, and I was like, nope, we're going to eat really soon, you know, and there was like a throwing themselves on the floor, crying, kicking situation, I would say, aw, I love you. I so get it. I get that you're feeling really sad. I'm not going to give you the cookie though. You know, it didn't make me feel awful. And I really think it's because that wasn't something where I can relate to as a child in my own life, where I felt neglected or unheard or unseen. It's just, it's not one of mine. I do, however, know that I do have friends and people I've worked with over the years who felt that every time they had big feelings, they were absolutely shut down or ignored, and they cannot hold a boundary with a tantruming child. They give in and they give in and they give in, and then they hate themselves for giving in, and then they hate their kids for being brats, and because they can't hold the boundary. But there's a deeper reason for why we can't hold the boundary. Everything comes back to us. You know, it's annoying and it's cliche, but it's true. Human beings are uniquely and completely self-centered, and not in a way that is like you're arrogant or you're unable to see other people's point of view. You're self-centered because literally everything that you see is perceived through the lens of your own experience. If you have been mistreated in a certain way, when somebody you love is mistreated in that same way, you will feel a pain that is so deep, and you won't always know that you're reacting to that pain. You might think you're reacting to the situation at hand, which is what happens so often in parenting. So I'll give you an example for me. I moved a lot as a child. If you listen to this podcast regularly, you've heard me talk about it. I moved schools after second grade, fifth grade, sixth grade. Then I moved kind of within Florida. Let's say sixth grade, ninth grade. Okay, so several times in my life, I had a move where it required me to have absolutely completely new friends, new school, sometimes only with 1 year separating the two moves. And I also went to several different camps, and I was a sleepaway camp kind of kid. So when you go to camp, it's not just like, oh, you're there for the day and you go home to your parents. I went to 8 week sleepaway camps, three of them. And so the reason I'm sharing this with you is because to just understand me a little, there's nothing inherently negative necessarily about moving. Some kids thrived when they moved. Some kids are army brats and they had to move all the time. So I'm not playing the violin for myself. What I'm saying though is it was a situation in which I was always striving and attempting and trying to be included, accepted, invited, liked, wanted, and it was a really big theme of my life. Not being invited to a party felt like I was gonna die. You know, this is the thing about, you know, preteens and teens and young adults. Social stuff is so important, and a lot of that is hardwired because we are human beings and we need our social circles to thrive based on our evolutionary desire to be cared for and fed and, you know, clothed and been able to stay alive. So it's built in that we will want that and strive for that. And so there's also just the surface part of being large-hearted people that want to be loved. And so when I think back to my devastation at times in my childhood where I'd be new, or I would be relatively new and had maybe made good inroads at the beginning, and then they decided, you know what, no, the new kid, she's not going to get included in this, that, or whatever. It was so painful for me. And I remember, you know, many, many nights laying in my bed, crying to my dog, just saying, you know, how am I going to be okay here in this new place? Nobody likes me. And that pain was really over by high school because I moved somewhere in 10th grade where I went to the same high school for 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. And I had very many friends that I had known earlier at camp and at school before we had moved away and moved back. So I did have a real solid base of people. So it wasn't like this was a lifelong problem. However, the pain triggers that were built in me when I had those experiences as a young child, they just kind of were low-lying. I think a lot of them were unconscious. And now what happens? I have my own children. And I would be in a situation where my child was not invited to a party, or my child was not chosen for some elite group of somethings, you know, whatever. And when I tell you, in the exact same way, meaning the opposite reaction between parent and child, in the exact same way that I felt totally unfazed, whereas a toddler having a tantrum is in misery, my kid wouldn't get invited to something. They wouldn't care at all. They would be like, yeah, well, it's okay. They're just all going to that so-and-so's house and no one invited me. But, you know, I'm going to go play in my room. And I would be in deep devastation, like as if it were happening to me again. And this is what I need to help you guys understand, because I think so many of us are walking through parenting and we're not realizing that this is going on for us. And we're not realizing that that trauma of being whatever happened to you, you know, for me, it was left out, excluded, unliked, unloved, uninvited. For you, it's your thing, but it's trauma. And when we experience that pain through our eyes, but we get to impose it upon people whom we love more than any love we could have imagined, I am just telling you, being a mom for me is the most excruciating. It feels like wearing my heart outside of my body every single day of my life. It's because I love them. I love them like crazy. And I know many, many people who are parents will relate to this. And the reason this is sort of a messed up scenario is because you can really convince yourself that you're upset, or you're being thrown off, or you're being reactive, or you're misbehaving in ways where you're acting out on other people. You can really convince yourself that it's just because you love that person so much and something is happening to them. But I really think it's worthwhile to take a little bit of a deeper look, because when you look into yourself, when you look into your experience and into the places that you have been hurt, there is a miraculous, miraculous change in your ability to withstand and sustain the suffering of people you love. And one story I tell is this one story where my son was being, as far as I perceived, left out of something. And like I said, he seemed to be totally and completely okay with it. I'm sure in his little heart and mind, he wasn't thrilled, but he certainly wasn't like clinically depressed or crying every day or talking about it a lot. It was just a thing, you know? And you would have thought that I had been run over by a truck, that my feelings were just smashed day in and day out, because it's not like I was going to put my crap on him. So if he was acting fine, I didn't talk to him about it, but it was on my mind and on my heart all the time. So I was talking to my therapist at the time, and he said, I guess Oliver must have been in ninth grade, because he said, what was ninth grade like for you? And I was like, I don't know, whatever, it was terrible. And he was like, well, we need to talk about that, because you are experiencing yourself in ninth grade, and we need to get underneath it. And so he had me do this exercise that I teach in my inner child workshop. So that's one of the things that I announced at the beginning of this podcast, that I do an inner child workshop, and I actually put it up for sale on my website. So you can buy the recording of this if you want to really get into this lesson, where he had me go back to my ninth grade self, and he had me basically say to this kid to first of all picture her. Okay, so if we picture her, at least, and it's only important how I feel about her. So it's, no one really knows how anyone else feels about you anyway. So it's how would I feel about her? And I felt disgusted by her. I felt like she was zitty and fat and unattractive and not desirable to boys and or girls or anyone. And I was really down on myself at that point. So when I look back to her, I got to be honest, I don't have much affection for her at all. And then he said, why don't you tell me a little bit about what life was like for her? And so I was sharing some of the stuff that was happening, that was going down in my life. It was a pretty messed up time. My father, actually, no, it was eighth grade. My father's father was dying of cancer, and he had him flown from Europe. I had only met him a few handful of times in my life, maybe three or four times in my life. And he came to live with us as he was dying with his wife, who I didn't really know. It was his second wife. And so that was going on in my home. And I'm an only child, so it was just me, my parents, and them. It was super awkward. And then I was having terrible social problems. I had no friends. I didn't like, you know, all the things about my physical self. And I didn't feel smart, and I didn't feel special, and I didn't feel talented. I felt terrible. And so we're talking about that. And, you know, easy to go back and tell the story, play the tapes. You know, that's what life was like for me in ninth grade. And he said, I would like you to go back to her, and I would like you to ask her to tell you what it's like to be her in your journal speak. Of course, you know, this is all my work. He always puts my own freaking work back on me, which makes me want to kick him in the teeth. But I also think it's really, really good. I have to sometimes be told to do what I know to do. So he said to do that. And so I did it. And I went and I sat down with my journal speak. I opened my computer. I'm a typer for journal speak, not a handwriter. I used to be. Now I'm a typer. And I opened up the document and I said, Nicole, darling, what's it like to be you? Tell me. Tell me what it's like to live in that house. Tell me what it's like to be in your body. Tell me what it's like to feel like you have no friends. Tell me what it's like at school. What does it feel like to be you? And I asked the question, and I really, really let her speak. And guys, this is not easy, because you're going to want to censor it, and you're going to want to be like, who cares? Like, why are we doing this? And why is it even important? And you're going to want to shut her down, and you're going to want to not feel it, and you're going to be disgusted and cringed out and sad and scared, and you're going to be all the feelings. But do it anyway. Because she started to talk, and she told me. She told me what it was like to live with her dying grandfather, who she didn't even know. She told me what it was like to have no friends. She told me what it was like to be influenced by that girl down the street and do some terrible things that she did because she was just so desperate for connection. She told me what it was like at school to walk through the halls like she was absolutely invisible. She told me what it was like to feel ugly and zitty and used up and fat. She told me what it was like to feel like she used to be special and she wasn't anymore. And she told me, and she told me, and she told me. And I just let her write. And oh my God, was I filled with such tremendous compassion for her. It really just kind of rewrote history, because I didn't feel disgusted by her anymore. My God, I just felt such love. I felt love for her like I feel for my beautiful teenagers who are going through all those awkward things. I really did. But the most magical thing about this experience is not what I felt for her. It's what I felt almost immediately for Oliver, which was total equanimity. I did not lose one more bit of sleep about his problems. I know he was doing fine anyway. It was me who was suffering. And as soon as I realized it was the suffering little girl in me that was having such a hard time with it. It wasn't him. And this is not to say that when our kids aren't suffering and telling us they're suffering, that this is not a different situation. I'm talking about day-to-day parenting things that you think are just about being a good mom. Maybe it's about packing the perfect lunch or making sure that they always have the best Valentines to give out on Valentine's Day, or their wardrobe is exactly on point. Who is that about? Who is that saving? Who is that saving? Who are you out there every day saving? And I know that people are doing this blindly, and I think it's so important. And I'm telling you, I did this exercise, and then I started doing it about other things. And like I said, I teach this all in my inner child workshop, but I went and found myself at different ages. And I started to let her speak. And I started to let her tell me things. And sometimes when she was so little and there wasn't something sophisticated to say, I would sit with her in sort of a meditative way. I would let her crawl around. I knew generally what was happening in her life. I've heard the stories, what was going on with my parents or money or their relationship or whatever. And I would imagine what it might feel like for a young child to be living through whatever I was living through. And I would just be with her. And I am telling you right now, this has transformed my parenting amazingly, immeasurably. It has transformed my ability to sit with my children through the hard stuff. Because here's the thing. What are we here for? Like, what are we here doing with these kids? We're here to make sure they eat everything off their plate. I mean, and I'm not trying to shame anyone who cares about this stuff. I mean, I care that my kids eat, and I care that they feel nourished and that they have enough energy to get through their day. And I try to help them make healthy choices. But is it really about that? You know, when I look at parenting, my deepest feeling, my deepest intuition is that the point of parenting, of good, wholehearted parenting, is to raise children who believe they are worthy of love and success in life. Whatever success means to them, whatever love means to them, that they are worthy and able to achieve love and success. And if that's the goal, which I always say, start with the end in mind. I'll just speak for myself. That's my goal. Then what do I need to do to help that child feel worthy of love and worthy of success, worthy of connection and worthy of the world rising to meet them? You know, different ways of saying it. And it's to, and me, and for me, one of the biggest ways to facilitate that is to be able to hold space for whatever they're going through. Because if you can't go through what you need to go through, a lot of times you end up with shame because you feel unheard, unseen, and unable to express yourself. And then you feel stupid and you feel ashamed for being a person with these big feelings. So shame is a huge barrier to feeling worthy of love and success. And so when I realize that the work I do on myself allows me to sit with these precious babies while they go through their stuff, that's the best kind. I think that's the best kind of parent I can be. And my daughter Charlotte, God, I wonder if I could pull it up on a podcast, but I'm going to try. My daughter Charlotte wrote me a card for my birthday last year. My birthday is in May. I think I'm going to be able to find it. Yes, I got it. And I'm going to read it to you just because it makes me so happy and because we're talking about parenting and because it's so important to me to, as much as I can, give people the gift that I feel I have somehow attained by doing the work that I teach for so many years, that I'm not caught up in my own stuff anymore, that I'm not playing out my shit on my kids, that I'm not constantly reliving so much pain that I can't be there for theirs, that this is the card my daughter wrote me, and she is 13. She wrote me this on my 49th birthday at 13 years old. Dear Mama, happiest of birthdays, here's a list of things I appreciate about you. When we watch TV at night, when you are so helpful with driving me around, how you are supportive and accepting of everything I do, when we go to the city together, when you let me feel my feelings, when we are obnoxious at events, and then she wrote, usually of religious matters. We are not very observant Jews, but when we go to temple, oh God, it's so hard to take it seriously. I'm just a person that giggles a lot. Okay, this is the end of the birthday card. So therefore, you can see there are many aspects of why I love you. Thank you for staying with me through the recent and past hardships. And although you might not hear it enough, You are doing so well at this parenting thing. I love you so much, your little muffin. I mean, my God, can you even deal with that letter? But that letter, that gift that I got from my daughter is a result of a lot of freaking hard work. And not because I'm so amazing, and not because I read 100 million parenting books, and not because of anything other than I am relentless at working on myself. So when she comes in and crawls into my room crying and lays on my floor because she's not invited, instead of going into total shutdown mode because I am in so much pain and agony, most of it unconscious about my own issues and my own sadness and my own fear, I can just be there with her for hers. And look how it means something. It means something really big. So I hope this helps you. I hope it, and if anything, what I want to do is create awareness, because all healing begins with awareness. If you're not following me on Instagram, I talk a lot about awareness and about figuring ourselves out there. Just go over to Instagram at Nicole Sachs LCSW. I have content out every day about this. All healing begins with awareness. So if you don't know that you're doing something, it's just really impossible to improve and to do better and to feel better. So even if all this podcast does is help you understand, maybe I'm doing that. Wow, maybe those super big feelings, there's something else underneath it. You know, just curiosity. Stay curious. That can be the most important thing I can do in this podcast, because it's really just, obviously, you know, in a 30 to 60 minute talk, depending on whether it's just me or someone else, I'm not going to solve all the problems of your life. But to become aware that we are deep and beautiful and complicated and aching and angsting and reacting all the time. And if we are curious to get underneath that and to know why we are the way we are, and to just, as I said, relentlessly keep working on yourself so then your relationships improve, whether they be with your children, with your parents, with your coworkers, your friends, your colleagues, your whatever. That makes for a rich and full life, and that's what I want for you. And if you're a person struggling with chronic pain or conditions, syndromes, symptoms, diagnoses, this kind of introspective work with the right intention. So understanding my body of work, understanding Dr. Sarno's body of work, knowing that there is such a distinct connection between mind and body that literal illness and pain can be eliminated through the unearthing of these repressed emotions and stored trauma. If you understand that, then this work will also heal your body, heal your systems, bring everything back into equilibrium. So I'm a person who obviously, as you know, had a diagnosis at 19 of acute degenerative spondylolisthesis and was told I wouldn't walk upright by 40 without spinal fusion surgery and that I would likely never have biological children or travel or exercise or play sports or sleep in any position other than the fetal position or with my legs raised 3 feet over my head. That was supposed to be my life. And through this work, I am a thriving 49 and a half year old young lady with 3 incredible children, and I exercised until the day they were born. I'm an athlete. I'm a cyclist. I'm a runner. I'm a fast walker. I'm a hiker. I can do anything. And I have never had a surgery or an injection or a procedure on my back. I just learned about the mind-body connection and this deep, deep introspective work that has healed my body, my mind, and my heart. And this is what I'm here to offer you on this podcast. So, hey, look, I did it. It's 11:03. I'm still alive. I was able to talk to you somewhat lucidly. So I'm glad I could. I send you guys big love. I hope that today is a good day for you. And if it isn't, I hope that this past 35 minutes of your life made it a little bit better. If you are interested in learning about my work, just go to thecureforchronicpain.com. So much there. come over to Instagram at NicoleSachsLCSW. I have two amazing online courses, Freedom from Chronic Pain and Freedom from an Anxious Life. Check them out on my website. Just help yourself. There's so much out there you can do to help yourself. All right. If you're enjoying this podcast, if you could hop over to iTunes and rate and review it, it does me a great service. And I absolutely love, love, love to read your reviews. They make me so happy. I'm not even kidding. Like the happiest girl. All right. I send you love. I'll see you next week. This has been the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. I'll see you then. Bye.